Have you ever just stopped and stared at a car? I mean, really looked at
Oh,
it.
absolutely.
Not just thinking about getting from A to B, but just captivated by its shape, maybe the history it represents, or just the sheer, cleverness behind how it was built.
Definitely. Some cars are just more than metal and mechanics, aren't they?
Right.
They've got a kind of soul.
Exactly. They become these legends. Welcome, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're diving headfirst into the brilliant world of British motoring. We've got a fantastic list lined up for you, the top 10 best British cars of all time. And these aren't just museum pieces, they still resonate right here in 2025.
They really do.
Now, look, we know the British car industry today isn't quite the giant it once was.
True.
But there was a time, wasn't there, when Britain really did rule the roads, famous for, groundbreaking designs, incredibly popular sports
Oh,
cars.
completely. Revolutionary stuff. Think about designers like William Lyons at Jaguar. Some of the manufacturing ideas he pioneered are still influential now.
Right. So our mission today for this deep dive is to dig into what makes these specific cars so special. We want to unearth those surprising details, the design thinking, the cultural impact, what lifts them from just classic status into being truly timeless.
And that's the fascinating part, isn't it? This list, it comes from experts who know their stuff,
Yeah.
both classic and modern cars. And what really grabs me is how these machines haven't just, survived. They've actually grown in desirability. Their value has shot up. They're incredibly sought after now. And it's because of that sheer ingenuity they represent.
Okay, let's get started then. Time to fire up those engines. We're kicking off with what we're calling the apex of performance and exclusivity. And our first car, well, it didn't just arrive, it exploded onto the scene. I'm talking about the legendary McLaren F1. When this beast showed up in 1992, it just changed the game. People still talk about it as maybe one of the finest sports cars ever built. It's that perfect mix, isn't it? Futuristic design, incredible beauty, and performance that was just untouchable.
Untouchable is the right word. And the F1 wasn't just about speed, though it had plenty of that. It was Gordon Murray's vision, working with Ron Dennis's F1 team, that really set it apart, that central driving position.
Yes.
That was genius. It wasn't a gimmick. It literally put the driver right at the heart of the car. The connection you felt to the road was something else, completely undiluted, something many modern hypercars, frankly, don't replicate.
That makes sense.
It just pushed engineering boundaries way beyond anything else around at the time. A real statement of ambition.
And incredibly exclusive, too. £500,000 back then was serious money.
Astronomical.
And only 106 ever made. I mean, can anyone even realistically get near one today? Or are they all locked away in collections?
Well, seeing one might require a trip to a very specific museum or event, but you're right, owning one,
Yeah.
you're more like a guardian than just an owner. They do come up for auction sometimes, very rarely.
And the price tags must be.
Eye-watering. Millions, easily. It just shows how its legacy endures, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Still so incredibly sought after.
Okay, from that pinnacle of modern engineering and rarity, let's shift to a car that's just universally loved, an icon. Even now, what, almost 60 years since it first appeared, it still turns heads everywhere. The Jaguar E-Type.
Ah, the E-Type, a true
And
classic.
the performance? Top speed 150 miles per hour, 0 to 60 in under 7 seconds. That was seriously quick back then.
It absolutely was.
Yeah.
Those numbers put it right up there with Ferraris and other Italian exotics that cost way, way more.
Right.
But the E-Type's magic wasn't just the speed. It was that look. Just breathtaking. Malcolm Sayer, the designer, he came from an aerospace background.
No way, really?
Yes, and he used those principles to shape the car. So it wasn't just beautiful, it was aerodynamically efficient too. You know the famous quote, right? Enzo
Oh,
Ferrari?
go on.
He called it the most beautiful car ever made.
Wow, from Enzo Ferrari himself, that's about the highest praise you can get, especially from a rival.
Exactly.
So what was it, do you think? What about its design made even Ferrari tip his hat?
It was the whole package. Sayer just nailed the proportions, those long flowing curves. It looked sleek, powerful, but also somehow restrained. It had this sense of movement even when it was parked. And it brought that kind of beauty and performance to a price point that was, well, achievable for more people. It democratized the dream car in a way.
Okay, we've had blistering speed and timeless beauty. Let's change lanes now. Let's talk about cars that became cultural touchstones, maybe more accessible. And we have to start with maybe the quintessential British car icon, The Mini Cooper S.
Ah, the Mini, yes.
Such a defining part of British culture, that brilliant partnership between John Cooper and the original Mini's designer, Sir Alec Issigonis.
The genius there started with Issigonis' original Mini concept, that transverse engine, front-wheel drive.
Yeah.
It was revolutionary for packaging. It made a tiny car feel spacious.
Right, the TARDIS effect.
Exactly. Mm. And then John Cooper comes along. He didn't just stuff a bigger engine in. The Cooper S, particularly that 1071cc version, that specific size, 1071cc, wasn't random. Cooper chose it deliberately to fit into a particular motorsport class. It let the Mini punch way above its weight in racing and rallying while keeping that incredible go-kart handling.
I always think of the Monte Carlo rally wins.
Precisely. It cemented its legend.
It just had this personality, didn't it? This sort of cheeky confidence. Why do you think it captured the British imagination so perfectly?
I think it was that underdog spirit. It was affordable, classless almost. Anyone could drive one. But the Cooper S version added this layer of sporty fun, this sort of mischief. It proved you didn't need a massive, expensive car to have a blast driving. It totally redefined what a small car could be.
Okay, from the people's hero car to a car associated with perhaps Britain's most famous fictional hero.
Ah, I think I know where you're going.
It has to be the Aston Martin DB5, just instantly recognizable anywhere in the world. Still as desirable today as when it launched back in 63, that lovely 4-liter engine, 143 mile per hour top speed.
The DB5. And what's fascinating there really is the power of pop culture, isn't it? How a film can take a great car and just elevate it to mythical status. Its place in the British Hall of Fame was absolutely sealed by James Bond, starting with Goldfinger in 1964 and then popping up again and again. That connection gave it this global personality, this aura of cool that went way beyond just horsepower and handling.
That Bond link is undeniable. It made the car a legend. But I wonder, for people who really love driving, did the movie fame maybe overshadow the car itself? Was it actually a great car to drive, forgetting the gadgets?
That's a really good question. Yeah. And yes, absolutely it was. Forget the ejector seat and the machine guns for a moment. The DB5 was a seriously capable grand tourer in its own right. It offered luxury, power, and it handled beautifully for a car of that era. It was sophisticated, refined, a very desirable machine, even without MI6 involvement. The films just amplified what was already there.
Right, let's switch gears again. Now we're looking at vehicles that really define luxury or utility, or sometimes both, often with groundbreaking design. And first up is a true legend. A workhorse, yes, but with a definite touch of class. The Range Rover MK1.
The original. The original? A game changer.
It earns its place because it was just so incredibly good at everything. Properly tough off-road, but somehow also comfortable and composed on normal roads. It really did carve out a new niche.
It absolutely did.
Yep.
The engineering was quite radical for the time. Coil springs instead of leaf springs. It was huge for comfort and off-road ability.
Right.
Permanent four-wheel drive gave it amazing grip. And it had that robust V8 engine for performance. When it came out in 1970, it basically invented the luxury SUV category that's so huge today. And, you know, that connection it's always had with the British royal family, that certainly didn't hurt its image.
No, definitely adds to the pedigree.
It cemented it as this symbol of British heritage capability and a certain kind of understated style.
Okay, from capable utility blended with luxury, let's swing towards pure, unadulterated automotive elegance. The Rolls-Royce Silver Cloud II.
Pure luxury.
Launched back in 1959. And a key thing here was the engine, right? The first Rolls to get that big 6.2-liter V8.
That's right, the L-Series V8, which remarkably, in various forms, stayed in production for decades. But putting it in context, the Silver Cloud II wasn't just about the engine. It was about defining what British luxury motoring meant. That standard of opulence, of quiet refinement. It set the benchmark. The car just oozed classic style, inside and out. They made subtle improvements over the first Silver Cloud, things like that lovely blue instrument lighting, better ventilation.
Small details, but they matter in a Rolls.
Exactly. But the core appeal was that imposing presence, the sheer comfort, the craftsmanship. It defined elegance for years, decades really.
Now, here's another car with incredible staying power, one known for mixing old school charm with surprising performance. The Morgan Plus 8.
Ah, the Moggie. Yes.
Morgan already had this reputation, didn't they? Building these beautiful, handcrafted, almost vintage-looking cars. But when the Plus 8 arrived in 1968, it quickly became their flagship.
It did. And the magic of the Plus 8 was how it somehow managed to blend that traditional, almost pre-war British style.
Yeah, the ash frame, the hand-beaten panels.
With genuinely modern performance and handling, thanks largely to that Rover V8 engine stuffed under the bonnet. It gave it serious muscle. It felt timeless, but it was exciting to drive, and people just loved it. The fact they kept making it, with updates, of course, for nearly 40 years.
40 years, until 2004.
That's right. That kind of production run is almost unheard of today. It tells you everything about its unique charm and how much people adored that blend of old and new.
Incredible longevity. Okay, final segment. We're looking at the wilder side, perhaps. Cars known for raw capability, maybe a bit untamed, often with a focus on customization. And where else to begin but with a true off-road legend, the Land Rover Defender.
The Defender, iconic.
Widely seen as one of the very best British vehicles ever. That classic 4x4 shape, introduced in 83, and they kept building them remarkably consistently right up to 2016.
It really did evolve, though, across its life. Three main generations, you could say. While it always kept that core utilitarian strength, the later ones, especially the third gen, started adding more creature comforts. Nicer interiors, better soundproofing, broadening its appeal a bit.
Making it slightly less agricultural.
Huh, exactly. But still incredibly capable.
Yeah.
That 2.2-liter diesel engine, for instance. The key stat isn't just the horsepower, it's the torque. 295 newton-meters, available way down at 1,500 RPM.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
It means you have huge pulling power, almost from idle. Perfect for crawling over rocks, through mud, towing heavy loads without needing to rev the engine hard. That's proper off-road utility.
Gotcha.
And even the production stopped. They made so many, you can still find them secondhand. They're an affordable way into owning a truly capable classic off-roader.
Right. Now, for something completely different, but equally focused in its own way, a car that's all about the pure driving experience, the Caterham 7.
Ah, the 7. Maximum fun, minimum frills.
This tiny, lightweight sports car, it looks so unique. And its history goes way back, doesn't it? To 1957, and the founder of Lotus Cars, Colin Chapman.
That's right. Chapman's philosophy was simplify, then add lightness. And the 7 is the ultimate expression of that, that tubular steel chassis. It's deliberately basic, designed to just support the essential mechanics. Nothing is hidden away.
Exposed wheels, minimal bodywork.
Exactly. It's raw. You're not insulated from the experience. You feel everything. The engine, the steering, the road surface. It's an incredibly direct, visceral connection between driver and machine. Pure driving.
And highly customizable too, right? People love tinkering with them.
Oh, massively. It encourages you to get your hands dirty. But here's a fascinating little fact, considering how simple and analog it feels.
Go on.
It was actually one of the very first cars designed using computer-aided design software, CAD.
Seriously, the Caterham 7.
Yep. Real forward thinking hidden within that traditional package. Quite the contrast.
That is surprising. Okay, finally, we round out our top 10 with a car forged in the heat of battle, born from intense rivalry and a singular goal, victory. The Ford GT40.
The GT40, a legend built for war on the racetrack.
A truly significant British classic car, even though it wears a Ford badge. A pure race car, designed and built right here in the UK, specifically for those brutal endurance races like the 24 Hours of Le Mans in 67 and the 12 Hours of Sebring in 68.
It was an extraordinary project, driven by sheer will. You have to remember the context. Back in the early 60s, Henry Ford II tried to buy Ferrari.
Right, I remember that story. Enzo pulled out at the last minute.
Exactly, and Ford was furious. He basically said, if I can't buy him, I'll beat him. He wanted to beat Ferrari at Le Mans, their signature race.
So he commissioned Carroll Shelby?
Well, initially it was Ford Advanced Vehicles in the UK, working with Lola Cars. Then Shelby got heavily involved later. The mission was clear. Build a car to dethrone Ferrari. The result? The GT40. Low, sleek, incredibly fast, and just ruthlessly efficient.
And it worked, didn't it?
Oh, spectacularly. After some initial teething problems, they dominated, winning Le Mans 4 years in a row from 66 to 69, although the 66 and 67 wins were with the bigger 7-liter engine cars, slightly different beasts. But the 68 and 69 wins, cementing the legend. That was the GT40, one of the most iconic racing cars ever conceived.
That story is amazing. That intense desire, that rivalry. How does that kind of pressure actually drive the innovation needed to create something legendary like the GT40?
It creates an incredibly sharp focus. There's no room for compromise when the only goal is to win against the best in the world. Every single part of the GT40, the aerodynamics, the engine, the chassis, the reliability, had to be pushed to its absolute limit. Engineers and designers are forced to find solutions they might not otherwise discover. That relentless pursuit of performance, fueled by that burning desire to beat Ferrari, it unlocked breakthroughs. And many of those lessons learned in the extreme environment of racing eventually trickle down, benefiting road cars for years afterwards.
What a journey through British automotive history. Just an incredible collection of cars we've covered. So thinking about all these machines, what does it all mean for you listening right now? Why do these cars, some of them decades old, still hold such power? Why do we still desire them so much, even with all the amazing tech in cars today?
That's the core question, isn't it? And I think what really shines through is that each one tells a powerful story. It's a story about ambition. Whether it's winning Le Mans or creating the most beautiful car ever seen, it's about brilliant engineering, solving problems in clever ways. And it's about capturing a moment in time, a certain style, a cultural feeling. It's that potent mix, the innovation, the performance, the design, the cultural echo that lifts these British cars beyond just being transportation. They become these valuable artifacts, historically significant, yes, but also just deeply desirable objects. They've shaped how we even think about cars.
Absolutely. What an amazing deep dive that was. From the McLaren F1, pushing the absolute limits of technology, to the Mini Cooper S, just capturing the spirit of an era, and then the sheer elegance of the Rolls-Royce Silverclad too. They've all left such a huge mark, haven't they?
They truly have.
Yeah.
And, you know, having revisited these 10 incredible machines, it leaves you wondering, doesn't it? What actually makes a car timeless? Beyond the specs and the styling, how do these specific British examples keep influencing car design and just our imagination, really, even today? Some of them were designed almost a century ago. It's quite something to think about.
That is a great question to mull over. Which one of these icons would you love to get behind the wheel of? Or whose story resonated the most with you? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into Britain's automotive best. We really hope you enjoyed the ride.